Welcome to Seize the GM, a show about how to seize the GM's seat and run with it. I'm your host, Zendead.
I'm your co-host, Jules.
And I'm the other co-host, Null Operations.
Have you ever had a great idea for a campaign? Do you have a bunch of friends who want to play an RPG but have no one to run it? You want to see what the world is like behind the GM screen instead of in front of it?
Well, we're here to help you do just that. Each week, the three of us are going to discuss various GMing topics. Terminology, maps, atmosphere, world building, you name it. So sit back, relax, and let's hit that GM seat hard. Banter, banter, banter.
Bruce Banner or...
Why not? Or banter, whichever.
Bruce Banner banter.
Ooh. So...
That's a shirt.
That is a shirt. All right. So, wow. It has been a whole week, guys. So, what have you guys been up to this week?
Well.
The short and sweet versions.
I went to my 20-year high school reunion. And at the reunion, I won a totally kick-ass sweet motorcycle helmet. So, now I am Rainbow Stig. If you guys have watched, no, I'm not kidding. It's awesome. It's like electric green and it's like a really nice helmet. And I've been wanting to learn how to ride a motorcycle, but I'm not doing anything until I get the gear. So I got it's actually an incredibly nice piece. And then on Monday, I got to see Ninja Sex Party with Tupperware Remix Party and Starbomb. Damn, there were a lot of bras being thrown that night. I am very mad I did not see any corsets, garters, crotchless panties, or boxers being chucked. I should have seen that. How about you two?
I don't know. All I did was convince a bunch of players to blow up their planet.
You did it.
I did. I totally convinced them it was a good idea to blow up their planet, and they fell for it.
God.
So you just created an entire player base of Lobos, didn't you?
Well, yeah, you know.
Well, whatever.
Yeah,
it's all good. You,
this is why we love you. Jules Watts, seal of approval. Poink.
That needs to be something.
You made a whole group pull a Lobo.
Right?
Well, then I'm going to kill them all with Giant Spider Queen. You know. Like you do.
Like, yeah, just like
the Great Queen Spider.
So, wow. My week has been really boring compared to the rest of you guys. I worked a lot. I actually didn't get to run my game because I was working so much. And they are almost finished. If I can get them early to show up early on Saturday, we could theoretically chew through the last two levels of this dungeon, because the third level is like super small. It's like six rooms.
Cute.
But if I could get them through this, that would be one third of the way through an entire adventure path, which I've never gotten this far with any group in any of those games.
Wow.
Yeah, because usually in the second
milestone.
Or third...
Gee, a milestone.
Well, in the second and third books, they have a tendency to get a little wonky.
Yeah.
And they... Either you end up with like some kind of fatigue because it's the same crap over and over and over, and a wash, rinse, repeat. And you can only do that so many times in some of these. This one's actually been really good for not doing a lot of that. Like in the first one, there was a fair amount of like running around town looking for things. Then they did a dungeon, and that dungeon was freaking massive. I mean, like when I got the maps, like I drew this out on like easel 1-inch grid. So I had like those sheets of paper. It took to do one floor. It took 12 sheets.
Jeez.
Dude.
Yeah.
How many floors?
There's six in that adventure.
Jeez.
And they were starting to have like serious, by the end of it, I, as the game master, was having dungeon fatigue. Because it was just so much. Yeah. And when it was all done, I'm like, I have got to take a break from this game for a while. So we played a couple of other things. We took some time off. We came back to it. And we ran through this pretty quickly. Actually, it was I was really impressed with how fast we were actually able to do it. And this whole entire front piece was a lot of like vignette pieces in doing some kind of investigational work and setting up a couple of other things. It was kind of cool. Then they went into the dungeon, and I think they've done the dungeon for, oh, two, three, I think it's been 4 weeks. And the big problem was is that in that four-week span, I added two new players. So I had to do some kajiggering to get this to work. Because like they were like a day away from town by ship, 4 days by land. So it's like...
What about how the birds fly?
None of them have fly that high yet. Or they didn't at that point. So I had no real easy way to move people. So I'm like, okay, we'll just do this and hopefully we'll go back to town. You guys can sell off some of your stuff, get some new gear, go back to the dungeon, and we'll see where you guys are at. And that was bringing the last character in, was going back to town and then heading back to the dungeon. And in the last 2 weeks, they chewed through almost, I want to say almost all of it in 2 weeks. So that's why I'm hoping if I can get them in early in like the next, maybe if we don't get it done this week, next week will be the end of it. And then there'll be something like 7th or 8th level, I think. So, and then it starts to slow down. I mean, in two adventures, they went from 1st to 8th level. And time frame-wise, it's been something like 6 months of
that's
playing.
That's really impressive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's like the type of things you see in an 80s montage in terms of time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's been pretty ridiculous. And the first adventure was so horrible that they did things like almost every encounter did ability damage of some variety. So they would have to go back to, they would have to leave the dungeon, go back to the house, rest for like 4 days and then come back.
Dang, vicious.
Yeah. So it was just, it was way too much. And so we decided that it was time to move on to something else, which is exactly what we're going to do now. And we're going to hit our main topic next, which is, I know, segue.
So well done. So smooth.
I know. Slick even. Slide right in. We are going to talk about very broadly and very shortly about some of the various player types that exist in games, because this will set up kind of what we're going to do over the next couple is we're going to go more in depth into these. But tonight we're just going to kind of talk about all of them that we want to talk about over the next couple of shows. That way we kind of have a working framework. So,
and we're giving you a taste, guys. It's a sous-son, just a little bit. Get you guys thinking. And over the next couple of weeks, we're pretty much funneling and gorging. So enjoy yourself.
Yeah, pretty much.
Matter of fact,
yeah. So, I will go ahead and kick this bad boy off because I'm in a talking mood, apparently. And we are going to start with the antagonist. Now, this is the kind of player. Now, these are all player types. So that's the thing to keep in mind. These are not character types. So this is the guy who is always picking fights with everyone, including the other players.
So my he's not rogues. Just kicking the NPCs. You know, he's not just kicking the NPCs in the nuts. He's kicking the barbarian in the nuts because he feels like it.
Yeah.
My rogues can steal all the gold from everybody else in the party, even though I've been caught like 5 times this session.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. All right. Next one we're going to be talking about is the lump. We've all had to deal with this. It's a guy that sits there, doesn't really say anything, doesn't do anything, doesn't even attempt to do anything. You don't even know if he's breathing from time to time. And at the end of the game, inexplicably, your snacks are gone. You know, it's that kind of guy who just doesn't... He's there. He's space. He's a piece of furniture.
He's a lump on a log.
Yeah.
Yeah. And pretty much, you know, and this does not refer to, like, the quiet player, you know, that doesn't say much, you know, doesn't really, you know, it's the person that doesn't contribute and doesn't want to contribute. There's a big definition. It's the, if you're in a game and at this point, you know, you really can't do anything, you quiet, maybe make some notes, maybe research a new skill you might have gotten, but you're still engaged in the game. Now, the person, the other one, just couldn't be buggered for anything.
So. Right.
Yeah. Next!
Mm-hmm. Up next is the continuity expert. This is the guy who knows all the details, who knows every aspect of lore. He's read all the books. He's read all the adventure modules. He's picked up that rare magazine that has that extra story, so he can tell your game master, well, no, that character wouldn't do that, and this city's over here, and all that stuff. He knows the lore and setting better than the people who write the books.
This is another term for these guys, are trolls. Seriously, because, like, writer trolls, like, these guys are the ones who, like, hunt down, like, you know, they'll go after, like, J.K. Rowling, and why did this character do this thing when they very clearly should have done this other thing that you've already stated before?
They actually actively search out plot holes or minor. I mean, you could see this in comics or something like that, and then it's like rile everything.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yep.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Ooh. The diva's next.
Better pay attention.
Yep. Look at me. Hey, I'm Zoidberg. Seriously, guys? Hey, look, people are paying attention to me. This is the person, I say guy, but it's the person who always wants to be the center of attention.
They're the dude. You know, mm-hmm. They... Boy or girl, just call him dude, because dudeism, everyone's a dude. Works out of that way.
Charisma is not their dump stack. It is their character class.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's... And sometimes people will play a diva, and those are kind of fun, but this is the person is a diva, and it's like, doesn't even matter. Oh, my God. Oh. Good example of this. If you guys have ever watched the anime Soul Eater, Black Star, the ninja assassin that no one should... Yeah, he's like, woohoo, look at me. I'm on stage.
Yeah.
That guy. Even though it's like, if you're playing the rogue and you're super sneaky, you were still trying to go, hey, everyone, look at me. And smack.
Yeah. Next.
Oh, sorry. That's me. Hi. Sorry. Next one is the tag along. And no, guys, yeah, Girl Scout cookies are awesome, but we're not talking about the cookies. The tag along is, we've all had them show up to games, and it doesn't even have to be an RPG. It's like, they're your buddy's girlfriend. They're your game master's little brother. You know, they're not really there to play, but they're there because their friend or their family member or their crush or their drum major, yes, that has happened, are there and they're playing. So they're there for more the, hey, I want to hang out. And they're not there to help create the story or throw dice, you know. But the interesting thing about the tag-along kind of player, you can convert these guys. You know, they're, for me, they are untapped potential.
They can be, yeah.
It's, don't write them off instantly. They might have something absolutely, holy cow, wow.
You got to mine new players from somewhere.
Yep. Oh, yeah. All right, what's next on the list?
Well, I can let you know, but I'm going to need some money before I tell you about the entrepreneur. Now, see, this guy.
Do you take Bitcoin?
Oh, I can take Bitcoin. Are we playing a sci-fi setting? Yes, I can. So, the entrepreneur. He's there for the adventure. He's there for the fun. But he wants all the things. All of them. And he's going to get there by getting everybody's money. Legally, though, maybe. He wants to start a business in your game, whether it's appropriate or not. Guys, I need the fighter to carry all the loot so we can get it back to town to sell it. I got a deal with a guy who, if I can get him paid, our next Adventuremon game, totally financed. Also, yeah. You guys are all on retainer and salary and no life insurance.
Mm. High risk job. You can't afford life insurance on these guys.
So we need a dental though.
Yep.
I can believe that.
All right. What's next?
The flake. So this is a guy who shows up, and you know he's on time. He's ready to play. He's totally engaged, and he's there for the first session and the second session. And then maybe he misses a session, but he apologizes and he's really sorry. And he really wants to get right back into what he was doing when he left, even though there's been a session or two, or maybe even three that's passed.
Hey, Derek. I can't be here next week. Look, I just got something to come up. I'll be here the week after. No problem. Trust me. I will. I'll be back.
Right.
Promise.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Let me hold my breath. They could even end up just ghosting on you. And I've seen people do this. And it's I feel like I've done it once, but the reason I ended up doing it was because I had
the thing is, like,
migraines.
And there's a difference between, hey, we have this big thing at work, and I'm not going to be able to make the next three games because I'm working those Saturdays.
Right.
And then after, yeah,
this is the guy
to make you guys know there. It
tells you when he's going to miss.
Or if they tell you it's a half hour before game, you know, illness. Yeah. But the thing is, like, if it starts becoming chronic thing, yeah, you might have a flake, guys.
Yeah. And this is one that you won't notice right away. This is one that takes a little bit of time to show up usually.
Yeah, so if you're friends with other people this possible flake may have gamed with, you know, it doesn't hurt to get a little feedback.
Yeah. Next.
Oh, yeah. Ugh. Okay, next one is the loner. And pretty much is like, fuck you guys, fuck the party, fuck all this. I'm going to go do whatever the fuck I want. And fuck the rest of the story. It's not really the diva because they're more whatever, no matter what's going on, pay attention to me. This person who is like my character's story and what I'm doing, you know, is a little bit more important. They usually don't work great in a team.
I was going to say it's kind of like a diva, but a diva is like, I want to be the center of attention and I don't care if the rest of the people are around. Whereas the loner is the, I'm a diva, but I don't want anyone else around.
Point of order. Point of order. Hold on.
No one else talks. No one else gets to add to it.
Hold on.
It's
entrepreneur here. Did you say loner or loner?
Sorry.
Looking to make a buck.
I have verbal quirks. I apologize.
No. Edit this out, Derek. No jokes. I was just making a joke as the entrepreneur trying to.
I know. And we love you for that, and always will, baby.
Okay. Yep.
But, you know, they go off, and it's not like, you know, a special adventure because of something. They always try and do it. And I think almost like Wolverine, but not as cool. Doesn't have that really, really awesome accent. Can't sing, you know. You know, it's just, you know, it's their singular story, and whatever they're doing takes precedence. So
it's also almost like they don't need anyone else to help them tell their story.
Yeah, and they don't want to even consider that option.
Right.
Good for book characters, bad for roleplay characters.
Yes.
Good. It's also good for, you know, certain type of RPG video games. But, you know, it's like that's you in World of Warcraft when you're just starting out your character. But when you're in a rage, you can't be that dude.
Yeah.
Next. So,
up next is the One Trick Pony. So I have a character I rolled up, and he can roll 24 dice to just, you know, whisper to people or to take a shot or whatever. I can't do anything else. I get like 3 dice to breathe, but I get like enough dice that I could shoot a flea off a guy 3 hemispheres over. That's right. I said 3 hemispheres over. I'm that good at shooting. Nothing else. The One Trick Pony is the master of one. He is so good at what he does that he has given up his just anything else just to be able to
his
do
his ability
that.
To rhyme on purpose.
Yeah. this is sadly, this is what not so much players but characters in Shadowrun become, are a lot of one-trick ponies.
Some systems are inherently supportive of this role.
Yeah. Yeah.
But on the flip side,
you have multitask master. And this is kind of the exact opposite of the one-trick pony. This is the kind of jack-of-all-trades, I will master everything, but I'm not really good at any of it. Not really, anyway. But he really wants to, and he wants to be just so kick-ass, and you really can't. Most games don't have that capability. They have, like, that mediocre level if you want to be involved in lots of things.
Your face, so. Mage, Decker, Rigger, Street Samurai is really cool, but
he sucks at all of those.
He sucks at all of those.
Yeah.
And he doesn't
And
it doesn't have to be an unfun character. You could be the, you know, you have a little bit of everything. And sometimes those characters are just fun to have. They can contribute little bits. They're the assisters, you know. Yeah. So it's like your guy has a 10 in lockpicking. Your character, you know, might have 3, you can assist. That's true. Can add for stuff, but you have to be,
they're never the
yeah.
center, mm-hmm. though that's what
they
want.
They want to be. Mm-hmm. A lot of them want to be. So. Yeah.
Because they don't want to fall into the, I'm a one-trick pony, where I'm really good at one thing. So they're like, I'll spread my stuff out. That way I can do a lot of things.
Yep.
And then they've spread themselves too thin.
Not everybody can be a Jedi and master of everything.
It's true. It is very true.
Although it would be hopeful.
Yeah, well.
Now, when the multitasker levels up, he becomes...
Oh, boy. Power gamer. You know, pretty much if you took the one-trick pony and the multitaskmaster and did some unholy... right and kind of merge them, you get the power gamer. They have to be the biggest, the bestest, the most powerful in everything in the game. Sometimes And here's the thing. Sometimes it's, you know, so people will gravitate towards that because, you know, they're worried. Oh, shoot. You know, we don't have a cleric. Okay, I have to learn healing and I got to learn fighting and armoring. And they want to make sure that they can do everything super well. And we'll sometimes, you know, they'll start pulling some really weird stuff to try and do it. You know, it's all about, for some of them, you know, it's the, they're worried that, you know, the rest of the people they're playing with aren't going to be able to do stuff. Sometimes it's the, it's a power fantasy and depending on what you're doing, you know, if they're going with the power fantasy, you know, recreation pace, I'm sorry, but person that's just worried, keep an eye out. You know, sometimes you can, you know, make sure that it doesn't become this horrible obsession. You know, so what do you guys think?
Does this game have goblins in it? Because I had this build for an anti-goblin ranger that is so ridiculous and awesome. I do have to give up the ability to taste salt normally. However, it works out in the end.
Yeah.
Taste salt?
It's a character flaw. It gives me like a few extra points.
Yeah.
How did I miss that?
Well, if you were this next one, then you wouldn't have.
Sorry, I was reading what to do.
Do tell.
The rules lawyer. So, knowing those little details, the exact page number for the description of how to taste salt, the exact wording and how the rule is interpreted, this guy's got it down pat. He is the rules lawyer. He will argue everything. In the way the antagonist will pick a fight with the NPCs and the players out there, the rules lawyer is going to pick a fight with the game master and anybody else at the table who might question him. He is there because, hey, these are the rules. This is the game we're playing. And if we didn't want to play this game, we should have played a better game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the thing is, they'll twist the rules to their own purposes.
And, no, that depends if they're a bad guy rules lawyer or a by the lawful good rules lawyer.
Well, that would be lawful neutral because all rules must be enforced exactly as written.
True.
That's you know, that's a lawful neutral one. Because you have the lawful good one who is knows all the rules and are trying to find a way not just to help the GM, but to help new players. You know,
there is a place for almost any of these mm-hmm. in a game, so that is something to keep in mind too.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Now,
Zended, thou art next. What wilt thou talk about?
Thy thespian. thespian.
Watch on S versus Z there, sweetie.
Yeah, well,
I'm a terrible person.
Yeah, well, this is kind of the Shakespeare wannabe. These are the guys that are going to pull off the most dramatic, most amazing thing, and they're going to be able to tell you exactly how they're doing it in lofty prose. And you've seen these people. They are the actor. They are their character the entire time. And you know what? There are games where that's great, but...
And sometimes the players are really, really good at pulling it off, right? Sometimes,
yeah, and then sometimes they're not at all. And they do wreck a game because they can actually derail something that should be like a 2-minute thing into a 45-minute or 2-hour thing because they want to understand the motivations of why these things are happening.
Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, if you're trying to help somebody get into their character, you know, doing some of this, but you set aside time before game, you have like a little one-on-one session with them so they can know them rather than exploring it while in the game, which crashes everything.
Well, it can. There is not, like I said, there are some games that this is a great thing to have. And games where there's very light rules and it is really about taking on another persona, these are the kind of players you want.
Yeah.
They will make a game amazing. So.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is another type of character another type of player that will make things amazing too.
Yes. Is crush your enemies, seize them driven before you, and hear them lamenting about how much XP did I get? The hack and slasher. It's find the monster. Hey. Yes, I made a joke. Yay. It's find the monster, kill the monster, lather, rinse, repeat. You know, yeah. As Zendead once told me, these kind of players are called murder hobos, which I'd never heard before. And I will never get that out of my head. Granted, I'll be honest, playing a hack and slasher or a game that lends itself to hack and slashing can be really cathartic, and it's kind of like a nice abnegation thing going on.
Well, sure.
But when everything is just, where is the next fight? Where is the next combat? You know, that becomes the main focus.
If
you know, that's what they look.
This is great for like first and second edition D&D.
Mm-hmm.
It's great for that. It really is. But you don't want this kind of player in your Vampire Dark Ages game.
I'm imagining that right now, and yeah, ooh.
Yeah,
are they playing hunters?
No. I said Vampire, the Dark Ages. Or you're playing something like, what other? Wraith.
Oh, yeah.
You cannot play these kind of players just cannot play in a game like that. There are some games that just, you need to, these are, the reason why we're going over so many of these is because there is a certain element that you're going to need.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, every game, and the thing is, like, there's a difference between playing a hack-slashy murderer character and having a player that is a hack-and-slash type of player.
Right.
You know, so, you know, to a little differentiate, you know. But the thing is, certain games lend themselves to hack-and-slash, but the ones that don't, and you try and force that on it, you will derail the game. And I don't think a lot of people will have fun.
Yeah. You'll start to lose part of it. So.
And, yeah.
But they're not the only ones who can derail the game. So,
it's true.
There's also the mystery writer. The guy who wants to find whatever secret plot or mystery is going on in the campaign, whether there actually is one or not. They will spend so much time looking deeper into things that they'll invent this whole scenario that might run the Game Master a little bit, you know, off course. Think the question, but not as cool and more experience points.
Yeah.
You know, it's... They start diving in so deep. It's not they can't see the forest through the trees. It's like, at this point, they have a pine up their ass, and they don't know what the hell's going on, because they're like...
They're planting the trees and forget that they're planting them.
Exactly.
Yeah. Actually, the mystery writer, the way I always thought about these guys is, not only are they searching for that underlying mystery, they're creating one.
Mm-hmm.
They're like the perfect conspiracy theorists in a lot of games.
Play game in paranoia.
Well, yes, but that game is made for that.
No, so. It's just like, there is a game for people that do that. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a game for everybody.
Yeah. And then next we have the Explorer. Now, this is somebody that's always looking for how the game is, like, the game world is put together. They want to know how things work. They want to explore the world that the game master is trying to create. Like, they want to they want to go in and they want to know why the dungeon that they're in exists, what it was originally used for. If they even, you know, even if the GM hasn't done all of that, they want to dive into that. They want to understand the world that their character is in. They're kind of like a light version of the continuity expert. They focus on the bigger picture, not every minute detail. They're okay with, like, I want to know the cultures that exist and the languages that are out there, and I want to talk to the people. Not, you know, the king wears purple underwear. You know,
because, I'm sorry, I wasn't expecting that to come out of your mouth.
But I mean, that's the difference between an explorer versus the continuity expert. The continuity expert knows the king wears purple underwear, and he only eats dinner with four-pronged gold, gold forks. Why? Because it was written somewhere at one point. Whereas the explorer is just like, dude, this is an amazing culture that you've created, and I want to explore how it works. And I think that is kind of cool, as opposed to the, I know every stupid little detail. So.
Yeah, good point there. And last. And
finally.
But definitely not least.
The Secret Game Master. So, a lot of us, especially on this show, appreciate the art of game mastering and all that, and don't really get a lot of time to spend it on the other side of the screen. But when we do, we love it. We get to play, and, oh, wait, just, you know, this part of the module is this. Sorry, I should have known. They are the ones who kind of do a little bit of backseat game mastering, because they want to help out the game master. They want to, you know, maybe they're helping to train a new game master. Maybe they're just at a table and they just can't help but remember that's what that secret is from that module because they read it a few years back. Yeah. They're there to try to help, and sometimes it gets a little too much, especially when they have their own teammates saying, same team, when they help the game master out for rule and kind of screw over the party. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, on like very, very minor occasions, just to make sure. But, you know, when you're playing and the GM is running, you know, let the GM GM unless, you know, they ask for help, because otherwise, you know, it's the, all right, you can do better, then you do it. And walk. I had a GM walk out on a game because one of the players was doing that.
Oh.
Yeah. And it wouldn't have been as bad if we hadn't driven 3.5 hours. And we were only an hour and a half into the game.
Wow, man.
Yeah. The fallout for something like this, you know, can hurt a lot of feelings.
Yeah.
You know, occasionally, like, all of us GM, and, like, if that happens, as GMs, we kind of sorry, dude. You know, if we do it, you know, if you see a player do it and you're playing with a group, call them on it. You don't have to be a jerk about it, but just like, dude, so-and-so is running the game, you know.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Yep. Right. So we've gone over all the dudes.
I'm going to wrap that up for now. And next... Next week, we're going to actually go into more detail on what some of these and how some of these can interact and play off of each other, even.
And what maybe some games that certain types of these types of players. And here's the thing. Nobody is a singular. It's like they are, you know, the hack and slasher. No one has to be. That's what they are.
For example,
it's true.
I'm a level 2 mystery writer, level 3 thespian, and level 7 secret game master.
I'm a level 10 one-trick pony. Period.
Well, that's if you're a one-trick pony, that's kind of what you are.
Yeah. just almost every character has something cool that they can do that's really freaking, you know, I always try to have that because it's kind of fun to break it out, but, you know, doesn't mean I can't play anything else, but.
You like what you like.
Yeah, see, whereas I am more like a level one thespian, a level two rules lawyer, and like a level six explorer, and a level one, because, you know, I can't be just like one of these.
Yeah.
Like a level one continuity expert. I dig into a lot of different things, but the big thing I do love is exploring the worlds.
I mean, on occasion, it's like I said, most of the time I do the one trick pony, but I always at least try maybe out of class, spend the 2 XP in thespian with a specialization in sarcastic comedy. And usually what I do plays into the one trick pony because my barbarian has all this cool stuff to make the first charge power attack. Holy cow. My base damage before I roll the die is 70. But when she rages, she starts arguing, you know, because dad was a barbarian and she's a barbarian and dad's the better barbarian. And just like, I know what I'm doing, dad. Rah! You know. Yeah, it gets silly, so.
That's fun.
That's awesome.
That is fun.
Yeah.
All right, so. Next week, we'll be tackling some of these individually and how they play off of each other and what games can work well for them. But now we're going to move on to stat blocks.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun,
dun. Dun, dun,
dun. Dun, cheek.
All right, ready? I got one.
Go for it.
They're called Sandmen. They are a race of beings that feed on the souls and joy of people. The phrase of sleep with one eye open is actually a reference to a way to keep them at bay when they are out and hunting. As long as you keep an eye out, they can't appear, which is what they have to do if they're going to feed. So in just a blink of an eye, they can appear or disappear. Now, if you do happen to catch one and you can see them moving, it's really creepy because they kind of move like a marionette that's had its strings cut and its limbs aren't quite connected right, so they move funny and kind of very weird. But one of the more disquieting things about them is actually that they actually have blank faces, i.e. they don't have any single feature aside from these green glowing eyes that look out from underneath the brim of the big wide brimmed hats that they all seem to be wearing.
Creepy. I can't help but think that any setting that has these guys, you're going to have people who develop by like drawing an eye on their eyelids or having a piece of jewelry they go to sleep with that looks like open eyes.
Yeah.
Neat.
So. I'm creeped out, dude.
That was the idea.
No, but here,
with one eye open. Sorry.
I have problems sleeping as it is. I'm going to have to watch something mindless and goofy.
Yeah.
You scare me, dude, and that's why you're awesome.
So what do you got, Jules?
Yeah, God. Let me look here. Basically, the weapon of adaptation.
Okay.
All right. Usually, I come up with these weird ideas a lot for newer players that are still trying to find their feet. So this is an item. It can come up anywhere. The story behind it could be like a magic item or a technological cool thing. Pretty much, if you're doing a all right, you're in D&D and you got new players, but they don't really understand, damage reduction, how all this works, and this and that. All right, you have this weapon, and you smack something with it, and crud, it's not damaging it. No, it has DR adamantine. All right. Then all of a sudden for the next, during that combat, you know, that thing acts as an adamantine, so it can get through DR, and the players start to understand how that works. But then all of a sudden, say they hit like a golem, you know, in the same fight, but it doesn't. They're like, they get a real feel without having to spend their in-character money and XP on it. But in Shadowrun, you know, same thing. You might have, it has sensors and readers, so you hit a ghoul and, you know, beep, 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 beep. And then all of a sudden, oh my God, you know, they have like the HMHVV. I apologize. I suck at acronyms. The HMHVV virus. You're like, oh, so it's a way you can have, you know, learning about a new mechanic, or, you know, if they're learning about like a world, it's a way to get them information. And Deadlands, it could, you know, it, like, it could be it's like a tricorder, but like usually with a weapon, because usually it's the hardest to think when you're under that kind of pressure. So it's a tool. Yeah. It's a tool you can give your players to help them a little bit, relieve a little bit of that tension, and in a way teach them. You know, it's, you know, I like having little things you could do. So because I lost a character because, you know, I was second level and I had just started learning D&D, and I didn't understand. It's like, well, I'm hitting him with my sword. It's not doing anything. I didn't realize sword had to be magic.
Yeah.
And I lost the character. It was my second game. I was kind of upset. So having something like that, you know, in a loot drop, I recommend it. You know, it's not for experience. You don't have to have it for experienced players because they understand, but it's a way to introduce new mechanics and new scenarios without, you know, thrashing it. And it's not going to be very powerful. There's always something better, but it's a good start.
Yeah.
Cool.
Nice.
Thanks. I'm learning. I has the smarts.
Yeah, I has the smarts. All right, folks, now we are going to listen to Null Operations give us our allied trickery.
This week, we're covering the Anti-Knight. Not all heroes are grossly incandescent. The dark appearance, the grim outlook, the broken path are popular threads for players to follow. And occasionally, allies find themselves on these roads. For many, this is a path to heroic deeds, but the worth comes from coin, wealth, or legend. And these followers are numerous and loyal, as long as you can pay their way. There are others, though, who walk the realms of shadow and dark languages not for material growth, but as a temporary ban on their injured honor. Forever fallen from grace, these Ronin seek to create a facsimile of a life once worth living in their eyes. They are haunted by the past and by events caused by their inaction or perceived lack of skill. The Anti-Knight no longer bears bright shiny barding. They carry no banner for a living lord. They garner no favor from a lady of the land. Their only goal is the holding up the husk of their broken glory. This NPC is fiercely loyal, but defining what that loyalty is tied to the challenge the players face. They are still bound to their code of honor and ethics, provided it supports the myth of their path of redemption. They're a volatile ally, because if crossed or challenged on their paths or the path they seek, they may quickly go from loyalist to betrayer, and in their eyes, be completely justified in their actions. An Anti-Knight that has crossed fully into the swamplands of Dark Knight will not return to their previous role for those who ushered in their final fall from grace. The Anti-Knight exists in any genre or setting where men and women can exist with a place of honor and prestige. In fantasy, the knight figure defines this role, and when they are disgraced by politics or a battle gone wrong, they'll seek to reclaim their honor from heroic deeds or noble actions. Pushed over the edge, and they become the brigand and sellsword of ease. In science fiction, they exist in the role of the gray hat hacker, skirting the edge of legal actions while trying to maintain the facade of being one of the good guys. In contemporary fiction, they're the disgraced soldier or police officer, caught in the wrong moment at the wrong time, and rolled from their duty into civilian life. Now they're the guard, the mercenary, or the vigilante. justifying the brutal actions against criminals because criminals force them to fall. They are a shield against the harriers on your backside, but they are not there for the righteous of the quest. They're there for the prestige. The consequences of their existence will follow them until they meet the players. At this point, the players can help guide them back to a true path of honor and dignity, or they can pull them deeper into the dark future the Anti-Knight has been forging for themselves.
Nice.
Sweet.
Fun people.
Very yeah. sweet. That's the, yeah, the, that kind of person is the, hey, you might be able to get your paladin powers back. Or,
you know, it's... by the dark goddess.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. That would be so pretty awesome. Cool.
It's so awesome.
All right. So next, we have Lexicon.
AKA words.
Or
and what they mean.
Or... in this case, we're just going to be sticking to one. We've had a lot of discussion on it, and I think one an episode I think is about what we're going to do. So
keeps us regular.
It keeps us regular, and we may actually start throwing some up on the Facebook page. So there we go.
Mm-hmm.
But today we are going to talk about the word churl. Which is a noun. Does anybody know what this word is?
If you've read Shakespeare, you should.
Well, sure.
Oh my God.
But not everybody does.
It's been a long time.
But it's a jerk, impolite, you know, mean, kind of asshole.
Actually, it has many, many
meanings.
It's
an asshole.
it's the actual definition. There are three that we're going to use.
Yikes.
One is a medieval peasant. Another one is a rustic countryman. And of course, then there's definition 3A and B, which is a rude or ill-bred person or a stingy, morose person.
So jerk.
Yes, asshole.
Yeah, they can be. an example of it is, in a sentence, is, as far as he was concerned, everyone from outside the city was a backwater churl.
Nice.
Yeah, so its origin is actually Middle English from Old English, which is churl, which means man. It's akin to the Old Norse carl, which is Norse for man or husband. Its first known use was before the 12th century. So we've got a pretty old one there. But that is going to do it for that.
Yep.
So, closing remarks and shout outs, folks. We're going to try to wrap this up pretty quick now. who wants to go first? Because I got one.
Well, you just nominate
you
yourself.
Go first. You just nominate Woo-hoo! Yourself, buddy boy.
Of course. Rat Queens. Read Rat Queens.
It's a comic. With the Rat King, because those things are gross.
It is a comic from Image, and the fourth trade is getting ready to come out soon. And I think the fourth trade is actually the end. I think they're officially ending it at the end of the fourth trade. Because the guy who's writing it is actually moving on to some other projects. And I have the first three trades because, oh my God, they're so good. But it is by... who did this bad boy? The first one has the first five issues in it. And it's actually pretty inexpensive, but it's... It is, it's a fantasy where the characters are kind of assholes. And it's all, instead of being like most fantasy where it's all men with like the token woman thrown in, it's all women. The entire cast, like the main group are all women. It's fun, and you should read it. That's mine.
That's pretty awesome.
Yep. Yep.
So.
Okay. Well, me, I've got, the name of the book is What If? Serious Scientific Answers to Absurd Hypothetical Questions by Randall Monroe. He's the guy that does the XKCD comic. And, well, I'll be honest. You learn a little something. You laugh your brains out. And if you get the audiobook version, I recommend picking up both, by the way, because it has illustrations in the physical book. But the audiobook, it is narrated by Will Wheaton. So it's, you know, what happens if, you know, you're on the Earth and it's spinning, and then all of a sudden, instantly, the Earth stops spinning. What would happen? And it's hilarious.
No, that's not hilarious.
Well, no, but the description is.
Oh, God, yes.
The description might be.
You know, and like, since these are such absurd, like, goofy questions, I mean, and they have books like, you know, the physics of Star Trek, Newton at the Bat, etc. You know, physics of the impossible. These kind of take, you know, a raptor attack and then put scientific theory to it. It shows like, well, you know what? Any kind of goofy, ridiculous, silly kind of scenario, you can, if that's where your mind goes, you can put physics and oh boy, it, you know, and you're like, I never thought about it that way. So that's fine.
Okay.
Hey, so what you got in all operations?
Hold on, I'm almost done with this light.
What?
And dead. Okay. Oh, not much. I'm just playing my current addiction. Final Fantasy Brave Exvius. It is a mobile game. It's one of those ones, you know, that tempts you to play money, but this one doesn't need it. It's nice, simple, fun. It's pretty much a gacha kind of game. You know, those kind of, hey, here's some cool stuff. But it's got all the Final Fantasy characters in it. All of them. Like,
Gachapon.
All of them.
Wait, do you have Sephiroth yet?
Okay, it doesn't have Sephiroth. It doesn't have any Final Fantasy VII characters. But that's the only one it doesn't have. I'm sure they're waiting to the game to come up for them to start releasing
when
that
they do
addiction.
The reboot.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy, the Tactics?
Yep.
You have Tactics?
I have deleted my party right now.
You win at life, sir.
Oh, yeah. This game is highly addicted. I've been playing it for almost a month now. My brother got me into it, and it is scratching that JRPG bug like crazy.
Awesome.
Nice.
Down here, I got another fight to do.
All right, I think that's going to wrap it up, folks, because we're about to lose Null Operations to this damn game. So,
seriously, send me a message on the site if you want a friend code. I will totally add you to my friend list in the game.
There you go.
Yep.
So, we will see you guys all next week, where we will dive into more on player types and the types of games that they should kind of be linked to, and the ones that play well off of each other. So, until next week, guys, have a good one.
Later, everybody.
Bye-bye.
You can contact us or the show using Twitter, Facebook, or regular old email. Twitter accounts are, mine is at Zendead.
I'm at Jules Podcaster.
And you can find me at Null Operations.
And the show's Twitter account is at SeizeTheGM. You can email me at Zendead@SeizeTheGM.com.
And me at Jules@SeizeTheGM.com.
And me at nulloperations@seizethegm.com.
We're also on Facebook. Find us at http
www.facebook.com/SeizeTheGM. So thanks for joining us for this episode of Seize the GM. Feel free to leave a comment about this episode on our webpage, www.seizethegm.com. Let the dice fall where they may, and we'll see you again next week.
Seize the GM is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 4.0 International License. All copyrighted material references herein are held by the respective owners. No infringement intended, and no claim of ownership is implied.
Music for this show is from Magnatune.com. Links to the artists will be in the show notes. Once again, we will see you next week.